This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles McLennan, Mike Johnson in here. Ray Ferraro will join us here in a moment. And we're just talking about these NBA reports where I guess the Board of Governors have been speaking with Adam Silver and the Players Association, obviously heavily involved. And Shams just sent out a tweet, Shams Charania from The Athletic, that the NBA League office informed the Board of Governors of projected value for teams and players with a December 22nd start date instead of a later date. More than $500 million would be saved, I suppose.
There you go.
So that's a lot of money. Their TV deal in the NBA is much more lucrative than the NHL's, if we're going to do the comparing and contrasting. And I guess Shams also reporting that the players have been in contact with the league, that they want to get going because they want to get back on a normal schedule.
Right.
They want to get their summers back again, and
they
want to get going, you know, because it would be a quick turnaround. We're talking less than 2 months. It's the 23rd of October today. They start on December 22nd. That bubble just burst like 10 days ago. And they'd be up and running again.
But that's only for two teams, right? Mm-hmm. And then maybe four teams. That was a month. So everyone else is 3 months. The other 28 teams or whatever there are in the NBA, that's 3 months minimum, if not more. So, yeah, same sort of thought with the NHL. Like, if they get back to it, yeah, it'll be tough for Dallas and Tampa. But beyond that, you know, I think most teams would probably be okay with kind of sucking it up and getting it started. What will be interesting is that, and I don't know the answer to this, but whenever the NHL starts, if they play half a year, 41 games, are right away guys starting at half their contracts? Like, are they getting paid prorated right away? Or is there some language in the new CBA they signed that dealt with this? I don't know the answer there. I always assumed it would just be prorated. Like, so the more games you play as a player, the better off you're going to be financially. But if that's not the case and somehow the players are guaranteed some sort of money, then the owners would be not in a good way if that's the case.
They're screwed.
The owners are just completely in trouble.
They are, because for example, Austin Matthews, say they play 48 games, you're going to pay him $11.5 million for that? Like, I think it has to be prorated. Like, why would it not be? We've been through lockouts where it comes back. You get a percentage of what you pay. You don't get the full rate.
But we never negotiated a bubble to return as part of an extension.
That's fair.
So, like, you know, it was all on the table. And if Donald Fear and the players had the foresight to somehow get, we got a 75% of our salaries guaranteed in 2020, 2021, no matter how many games we played. Like, that will put some organizations just in their cash flow, because without fans there, they're paying guys, you know, whatever, they're a couple million bucks a week or every other week as a team collective. That's going to put a dent in some bank accounts around the league.
Oh, there could be some teams that are in, like, legitimate trouble.
Well,
surviving.
They'll have to draw line of credits and stuff, try to, just to cover it over.
Right.
That's why I think it would – I find it hard to believe that Gary Bettman – would allow for that. You know, 30 years on the job, we know.
I had someone suggest that was the case, though, and I'm like, I got to get to the bottom of it.
I wouldn't be surprised, Johnny. I wouldn't be surprised if the players are like, no, we worked out all this kind of stuff. Like, we're willing to play 82, but if you don't want to play 82, then whatever. Right. But we're getting paid for 82. It's a lot like what baseball went through, right? Like,
it's
baseball,
exactly the same conversation baseball was going through.
Yes, and eventually, the players did not give in. Like, eventually, Rob Manfred and baseball were like, okay, fine, this is what we're doing, and this is how we're gonna operate. I don't know how that's going to apply in the NHL. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it applies in the NBA. Like, I would think the same kind of thing. If they're playing 72 games, that's close to 82. The owners might be willing to bite the bullet on that and pay them the full rate. But if it's 48, that's a substantial difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the TV networks, they're not paying for games that
they
can't play.
No, they are not.
No. So money is going to be squeezed here. But I'm rooting for the NBA to get going as soon as possible. I think that'd be great. If you could start
it's
by the 22nd, absolutely. That is a lot quicker than I expected. I was thinking they were going to push it back to February, March, maybe, I was hearing. This would be a much quicker turnaround. The players want it, which I think is important. You need the players on board.
Right.
But I don't think this is a good sign for the Raptors necessarily playing in Toronto. You know, the quicker this gets started again, the more logistical pain there could be for the Raps and the border and all that.
Did you guys see the article yesterday about the rapid test? They're going to start in Calgary's international airport. So if they could somehow sort that out quickly, then basically if you could get it turned around in half an hour, the team lands, they go to their little holding room, everyone does their test, 30 minutes later they're all clear and on they go. That would open up the borders for athletes,
I agree,
among others, to travel back and forth and play if you could work out something like that. But you're right, the sooner they start, the tougher it is for the Raptors, like the Blue Jays, like TFC, to kind of get games up at their home arena here.
I said this yesterday, Johnny. I think, you know, we're all sitting around waiting for a vaccine or a cure. I think it's going to be here for a while, and we have to live with it. To me, rapid testing is going to be a game changer as far as getting some normalcy back in our lives. And it's not just going to be for sporting events. It's going to be for schools. It's going to be for bars. It's going to be for things that we, you know, took for granted before all of this hit.
Going to a movie theater, going to a concert, whatever.
Exactly, exactly.
Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here is Ray Ferraro. Ray, I don't know if you were surprised by this or what you were expecting, but reports out that the NBA is now targeting December 22nd as a start date, which is less than 2 months from today. And I was surprised by that. And their counterpart in terms of scheduling, of course, would be the National Hockey League. They both play 82 games. They start around the same time. Does this change anything from your perspective in terms of how the NHL might operate if the NBA is pushing for a quicker date than we originally thought they would?
I don't think it's too big a stretch to say, man, the leagues are obviously talking to each other too. I mean, everybody's trying to figure this out together and at the same time with the same information, which is never enough information. And so when I heard that date, of course, you know, that tweaks me right away to, oh, I wonder how far behind that or, you know, in association with that date they can be. But like we saw with the bubbles, remember how many different dates was there, guys, that there was a target date and then there was this and it got pushed back and then there was a camp date and that got pushed back. And, you know, I like when there's target dates because it gives me hope. We talked yesterday about the canceling of the Winter Classic and how it sucked because it's like, man, that's 2.5 months away and they're canceling it. It feels like it's never going to end. So I'm certainly happier with this, although logistically, I don't know. How do you pull that off?
Well, I guess that's right. We have to know way more details, but it sounds as if the players are pushing for it as much as the owners are, and it would be worth a lot more money. You know, like we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars if the NBA gets started early and they play as many games as possible. Their TV deal is much more lucrative than the NHL's deal. But it's still money. It's real money. And I think both leagues are anticipating fans kind of scattered in different capacities throughout the league, which would factor in as well. But, with the NHL, I think what you said the other day is a very important point. They're going to want to be done before the Olympics in the end of July. You would assume NBC has told them, you know, we don't have programming for you once the Olympics begin.
Not putting you on the Golf Channel again.
No, so it's got to happen before then, and then it's just a matter of when you can start and how many games you can play, and then logistics of the border, I suppose. But,
when you think of that, though, Brian, even just in that last 20 seconds, like, doesn't it? I know it's not impossible, but hell, I can't plan three things in the morning. You know, to get And you're like, how the heck do you even pull this off? Like, how do you? You know, you just say, oh yeah, we're gonna work backwards from the Olympics, and then we'll work on the availability of the buildings and how many fans can go in, and all of that is gonna be a plan that's on kind of like a treadmill. It's always going to change. The plan's always going to be moving because information will change and realities will change. So it's, I'm much happier to hear December 22nd, if that's possible, than what we heard yesterday, which was cancel, cancel, cancel.
Right.
Either way, the fact that they're talking about January 1st, December 22nd, whatever league, it's still better than them getting together and saying, you know what? we probably should push this to February. So that is reason for optimism, even if it ends up changing 10 more times before they actually get going. But, Ray, the news of the day, Travis Dermott signed for virtually nothing, $874,226, an obscure number. We were debating how good he is. You see him firsthand all the time. Where do you think his game is at, and where can it end up?
I liked his game more a couple of years ago. Once he got hurt, it's like he didn't come back with the same vigor to his game.
Juice.
Like there was a boldness, yeah. Right? It was missing. And I don't know if he was tentative or if he was unsure. And then whatever it was, he kind of lost it for a while. And you know, he didn't rush the puck. He wasn't in the play. He wasn't physical really at all. Not that he's got to run all over the place, but like we used to, you know, like when you had a player like Dermott, we used to call him oh, he's a Sparky, right? Like there was always something happening around him. Mm-hmm. And that's lost. He lost that a little bit. I thought at the end of the year, he started to show a little bit more of that again. I do think he can be a four. Like, I think he can be a four. But there's some growth that's got to happen again for that.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, they'll take that if he can become a four. I think that. Yeah. I wonder if Ray, if he can watch being around TJ Brody, like a left shot guy who plays on the right side, and maybe that's the destiny for Travis Dermott to play in the top four in the Toronto Maple Leafs, and kind of watch how TJ Brody does it, similar body type, similar kind of style, not uber physical. And I wonder if that helps him kind of see it firsthand. Like, maybe this is how I can do it.
Well, don't you think, though, Johnny? Like, yeah, that can be. If he can translate what he's seeing and learning, and if he's into learning, mm-hmm. right? Everybody's different. Like, I don't know if people, like, they always say, oh, the player's going to be local fan bases about their players, and I'm talking about Vancouver, and now we're talking about Toronto, they always believe, because they're big fans, that this player will get better next year, and then he'll get better next year, and then he'll get better next year. That doesn't happen. Otherwise, everybody would get better all the time, and by the end of the career, you would be so much better, but it doesn't happen. So, yeah, he's got a little bit of a template in Brody. Part of it would become confidence. Part of it would be having a more defined roadmap for what he's trying to be. Because right now he seems, you know, but he seems like a tweener.
Yeah.
Like I can't quite make up my mind what he's supposed to be. But I do think, like, I don't have any doubt he's an NHL player. Like for me, that's an NHL player. It's, can he be a four, to me, is the question. The one guy here, I don't know how much people are talking about, or I've seen him a few times at the Worlds, is Mikko Lehtinen, and I think he's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, man, yeah. that would be like Mikheyev found money if he can come in and play.
Well, Krabby Hayes has him right in the lineup on day one. Because starting
with an
the season,
on his jersey too. Don't forget about that.
Well, yeah, we got. I mean, I've got to bring in Ray to the conversation of why Hayes is Krabby.
Yeah, Krabby here. What's he got going?
Well, we start the show, and he was like Dermott's number seven on the depth chart for me. So Johnny and
an
I
angry
kind of,
seven.
Yeah, it was an angry seven.
It was closer to an eight.
Exactly. But you know, Johnny and I kind of defended Dermott the same way you are, Ray. Like I think there's more there. But Brian made a good point saying Lehtinen is going to get every opportunity to play because, you know, there were a lot of suitors for him, and he signs with the Leafs. He's still playing. He looks like he's going to be a good player. The reason why he was crabby is he did not take anybody's advice, and he golfed again today.
Hayes did.
Yeah, yes. I played, and it was awful.
That didn't go well.
Awful.
So, but see, here's the thing. You predicted this.
Yeah.
You got into your own head. You got into your own head and said, I'm actually not very good, so I will return to my not very goodness. You sabotaged yourself on the way to the first team.
And that's why I'm so upset. And the thing is, Ray, through five, I ended up shooting 90 on the nose. I doubled 18. But I was not that anyone cares about the details of my game, but I was rolling early. So it was one of those, wow, like I found something. Like I'm doing it, Hare. Like here we go. We're on our way to Aspen, and I'm going to break 80 again. And then the wheels fell off, and I knew it, and I called it, and that's what made it that much more frustrating. And I knew that Grappler or Carlo like would be telling people, like, O called me. He's like, I heard you slashed it around. I'm like, who told you that? Who's calling people on about my golf game? Like, why is this public knowledge before we even get on the air? So everyone knows. Noodles heard about it as well. Like,
I got a text. Yeah,
it was
I got
awful.
A text.
And I was so mad, right? Like, so mad because I played so well and I was playing well. And then I called it, and it happened, and it was not a prediction I wanted to
see through. You know what I'm angry at?
That what's that?
I'm angry that I didn't know you were going to play, and I would have laid on a shot.
Okay, throw him on hold, Mull. See if we can get him back.
Yeah, we need him back. We need him
he
back.
He was swearing there. That was the beeper. He was going to trash talk. He was
I want to see what he was about to say.
He got muted.
He was
got
about
muted.
To chirp something. Yeah, exactly. It was the Trump and
preemptive
Biden.
Mute. It was going down a dark road.
It was the Trump and Biden mute from last night. I mean, we'll get Ray back in. We'll ask him more about not necessarily my golf game, but
I agreed with him, guys. Like I that's what I said earlier. I think Travis Dermott has more. We just some guys it takes a little bit longer to arrive every day at the National Hockey League level. You remember what Randy Carlyle said about Jake Gardner? 300 games. Give
that's
me 300
garbage,
games.
Though. I never liked that number. Like Uncle, how come defensemen get 300 games? Why is it so confusing to stand back there?
I don't
get
know.
It. Nobody else gets 300 games.
But Johnny, I mean, Ray would back me up on this comment, but I said, and disagree with me if you want, the easiest position to play in hockey is wing. Oh,
right wing. I know it. I was it. I understand that, but like, I'm not giving a guy 4 years, 300, 4 years to figure out if he can play or not, or to get to where he's going to go to. Not now, not even back in the day, maybe back in the 80s or something when, you know, there was a little bit more gamesmanship, we shall say, to kind of navigate. I don't know, Ray. Like, am I being too strict on the standard? I don't think defensemen, it's not that tough that they get, you know, they can't,
games.
As a winger, you can step in and do nothing and it's fine. That's not the case for defensemen, but I'll give you half a year. After that, like, you're just a player. You got to figure it out.
Well, I know that case, I've sure seen a lot of guys not get a fair shake then because they're long gone.
Right. As they should be if you can't figure it out 3 years in.
There's a buddy of mine, and he works in management, and he, after a while, you know, you said after a half a year, he said, they're just a guy. He's just a guy. Meaning
a human.
There's lots of players like this.
Right.
And you can go in the American League, and every year, there's 50 or 75 guys, and you're like, man, that guy can play in the NHL. He was in the right spot. He could play in the NHL. 300 games for a defenseman. Holy smokes. Good for them if they can work that out.
That's a defense and union staple right there. Be like, hang on, coach. Ease off. I got two more years till I have to figure out how not to rim it to the wrong guy.
And what position did Carlisle play? He played defense.
Yeah,
so, of course, he's going to speak to that knowledge.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
That logic.
Bias.
But yeah, I what I was saying, and it was cranky, but it was honest. I mean, I look at it as Lettinen, I think, is going to get an opportunity to play, and that's based on history, not knowing him as a player. You know, I have not seen him play, but as I've stated many times over the past couple of weeks, Ozhiganov had suitors, picked the Leafs, played opening night. Zaitsev, Mikheyev, they all played opening night. I think Barabanov's probably playing opening night. And I think Lettinen's playing opening night. I think these were guys that a lot of teams wanted. They chose the Leafs because I think the Leafs are going to give them an opportunity. And I think Bogosian is here because of his style, because they want something different on the third pairing, and he's going to have an opportunity to play as well. I don't think he's playing every night, but I think
that third pairing's going to be pretty crowded.
Yeah, that's why I think Dermott's number seven right now. Like I do. I think Hall is going to play based on his contract and what he did this year, and they I think they like him. I think they look at Hall and they think
he should play. He deserves to play.
Okay, so there it is. Like, I don't think it's outrageous, this idea that Dermott's number seven. I mean, I'm not saying he's playing with the Marlies, but I think he's got to fight.
I think it's wrong that you came from the golf course with the red ass and then McGruffy all the cut.
It's true though, right? I have not acted like that. I don't throw clubs or snap. You know, I don't ruin other guys' rounds based on my attitude. But I was so mad, like fuming because I was playing so poorly. It was that ugly.
Did you see McIlroy break his club yesterday?
No, I did not. Oh, good for him.
Yeah, he flared one right. He was that old stretch. That old chestnut, bogey, double bogey, par, double bogey, and he flailed one right, and he pushed his wedge into the ground. I've seen lots of guys snap it on the knee, but he pushed his wedge into the ground, and it just broke in half, and he was walking up the fairway with both of them, both halves.
Yeah, that's
like, good for you.
Good for you every once in a while. I support that on tour. I mean, that's their livelihood, right? Like, these guys.
Yeah, but they don't have to pay for the new shaft either.
No, they've got 10 of them in the trunk. No. So that's a good point. But
have you ever been in an equipment truck at a PGA tour stop? They're awesome. Ray, have you ever been in one? I've been in a couple, and like, they're there to service the pros. And if they need a new shaft, they want to try a new head, grip, whatever it is, if they don't have extra sets, and they just whip them up in a second. It's like Christmas morning. You walk into those places, you can get anything done, custom made in 3 minutes.
Is it like playing in Toronto with all the reps and the gear?
Exactly like that. Free gloves every day, free stick. Just try it out.
Okay. Noodles, remember when we, with the island, we were a little tight on the budget?
Yeah, I could only use Victoriaville because I think the trainer got a kickback from that company. I asked for Sherwood. He's like, no, you can't get a Sherwood. Yeah. Victoriaville is what you're going to use. And it was like a 2x4 with a blade taped to it.
We had a practice rink. So I break my leg, dislocate my ankle. I miss 3 months. I come back and I'm going to start the practice. So I say to Joey McMahon, who is this great guy, our assistant equipment guy. And I'm like, hey, Joey, I need my sticks. I'm going to start practicing next week. He's like, yeah, you got to talk to the big guy. So I go to the big guy over at the practice rink, and he's like, I don't know if we have any.
Who's the big guy?
I haven't. The
John
head trainer.
Oh, the head trainer. Okay.
I was going to say. Okay, cat's out of the bag. So I go, where are my sticks? He's like, I don't know, maybe they're in the back. And I'm like, in the back? I haven't played in 3 months. And so he goes, they could be up front. Well, the only thing up front was the sporting goods store.
The used sales rack.
They were gone. All the blades were gone. I had no sticks.
Wow.
Like, National Hockey League.
And
then I went to the Rangers as a free agent. They asked for a box of blades, and there'd be like four of them.
Yeah.
There'd be blades everywhere. I'm like, holy smokes. I was using my other ones like till the fiberglass fell off them.
Every team, different bit of a different operation, isn't it? Even though you're in the same city.
I agree. Like, I went to the Rangers. I was there for 5 weeks. I had two sets of pads, two sets of gloves, like everything. I almost got in a fist fight with our trainer trying to get a new stick one time. Like, it's that type of stuff on the island. Like, it was just different, right? Like, and he was working. I'm not taking a shot at him. He was working on a very tight budget because he had to answer to people above. But not every organization treats their budgets the same. I imagine in Toronto, it's just whatever. Johnny, you could speak to that. Like, whatever
you
want.
Ask for anything. They were like, I would use whatever I was using, Easton and whatever wood inserts blade it was. And every company would just come like, why don't you try my Louisville? I'm like, I don't really want to. Like, well, here's half a dozen. Just take them home. I'm like, okay, I'll try. I'm like, I must have 30 sticks kicking around that I never used before. They're just, you know, they just give them to you to try just to hope that you can use them sometime. And then you're on TV enough that it seems to make sense to them. Yeah, it was...
that was not happening to us, Johnny. That was not happening.
I can imagine. All right, buddy. Well, we'll leave it there.
Are you going to play again?
Oh, of course. I have to now. I'll play mini putt if I have to, but I'm playing. I'm doing something. I can't go on like that. Yeah.
90. You cannot go out like that.
No, 90. 42 on the front, and it was choppy. And then you can imagine what the back looked like. It was disgusting. Gross.
48, that's pretty smooth. That's good. That's,
oh, it was awful. That is 76 to a 14-shot swing in 3 days.
Effortless 48 in the back.
Yeah.
Yes.
With a couple of pickups. Like it was probably worse than that. If we were playing tournament rules, I'd still be out there. But anyway, you guys are lucky enough to have me in your presence for the rest of the afternoon. We'll do it again Monday at 5. Thank you, buddy.
Have a great weekend, guys. See you.
There he is, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days continue with rates from 0% and free winter tires with every in-stock new vehicle purchase in October. MapleToyota.com. Kenny Florian coming up, former MMA fighter, host of the Anik and Florian podcast. What will Khabib look like tomorrow? First time in the octagon in over a year. Is McGregor in his sights in the future? GSP, is that even a possibility? We'll see what Kenny can tell us about that. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Kenny Florian coming up in just a moment. Game 3 of the World Series tonight. Walker Buehler on the mound for the Dodgers. Does he go back to the tight pants, like the painted on pants? Or does he loosen those
know.
Up?
I'd say loosen it up.
Go with what works. Whatever.
It didn't work, though, didn't it?
It did not work in the NLCS.
I know, but like, you're there. He's gotten far enough of this to get there. I like his response to when he's asked about his tight pants. He's like, not the time.
Yeah.
It's not the time.
See, I disagree with that. It was absolutely the time. You just wore those pants, and you got blown up in the NLCS, and those were ridiculous. Like, ridiculous to wear pants like that in pro sports when you don't have to. Those were the tightest pants I've ever seen a ball player wear.
Just because you don't like them, Hayes, doesn't mean that he can't like them.
Well, I just...
It feels like... It's like wearing compression shorts the whole way around. It's the same thing.
Is it? Is it with baseball pants?
If he feels like it is, then it is to him. And that's all that really matters.
Well, his game would suggest that he wasn't overly comfortable. Maybe I'm reading too much into it.
All about comfort. That's all you want. If you're comfortable, you can perform. He didn't look comfortable with the very, very tight pants.
Extremely tight pants. But we'll see if he doubles down again tonight. This time in the World Series, even more eyes watching tonight. And there's going to be a lot of eyes watching the octagon. You know, they're overseas. They're over in the Middle East. And Khabib back in the octagon for the first time in over a year, taking on Justin Gaethje tomorrow. And to talk about that fight, amongst some other things, we're joined now by former MMA fighter and host of the Anik and Florian podcast back on Overdrive. Here is Kenny Florian. How you doing, Kenny?
Good. How are you?
We're doing well. We were talking about Khabib just barely making weight. And he basically had to gear down to make it happen. You've weighed in many times throughout your career. Were you ever that close? And what's the panic like when you're on the scale and you're not sure you're going to make the number?
You know what? I was. I remember when I made 145 pounds, I had to do it twice. Both times were absolutely miserable. You know, I knew that I was, you know, I had made weight for the most part, but you never always know, because there's going to be a difference between your scale and the one that is official. So it can be definitely nerve-wracking and stressful. And, you know, obviously Khabib, a very large lightweight, it's never an easy time for him to get on the scale. So to me, you know, I think he'll be fine for tomorrow. But I thought it was interesting that he was definitely nervous about stepping on that scale, and it was certainly close.
Kenny, what kind of stuff would you had to do, or Khabib in this case, like to try to get that weight? If you know it's that close and you're coming down the last 24, 40 hours, like what are you doing to try to cut as much you can? And then how much more do you put on between whatever the Thursday weigh-in and the Saturday fight? Like how much more comes back on you?
Right. Okay, so when you're that close, I mean, you're literally looking for anything. If you have any saliva left, you are trying to spit. Yeah, if you can pee, you're going to try to hit the bathroom any chance you can get, you know, whether it's, you know, wearing sweats or some kind of sauna suit on the way to the weigh-in area, anything possible to lose weight you're doing. And people will do anything as far as it literally cut your hair. I mean, at certain points when you're in the sauna, because that's what people are doing, they're cutting water weight, whether you're in the sauna or whether you're in a hot tub. Whatever it is, it becomes very stressful physically, spiritually, mentally when you're cutting weight for that long. So It's one of the more difficult things that fighters have to do. And, you know, as far as between weigh-in and fight night, you'll have at least 24 hours to, you know, rehydrate and get food in you. And, you know, you'll see some differences. Some guys will only put about 11 pounds, 10 pounds back on. Other guys will sometimes put 20 pounds, sometimes even more, depending on, you know, their weight cut and what their bodies are like. So it's a pretty big difference for most fighters.
Before we get to the Khabib fight, I was at UFC 100 and I saw Henderson knock out Bisping, and that was a crazy thing to witness live. What did you think of the Joaquin Buckley knockout?
Oh my gosh, I was at UFC 100 as well. I remember that knockout, and the Buckley knockout that just took place was one of the more spectacular, perhaps the most spectacular knockout we've seen. I think it's spectacular for a couple different reasons. First, the manner in which he did it. You know, his opponent had caught his kick, and he threw a spinning back kick on the other side and knocked him out directly to the face. It was something that you see in a lot of movies, and I think a lot of martial artists sometimes would see that in a movie and go, that would never work in a real fight. Well, it actually does, and it did. And it shows other professional fighters and fans alike that these high-level techniques and these spectacular moves are possible. And it kind of forces a lot of the professional fighters to start to step up their game and start to work on some new techniques. So, I mean, with that one knockout, Buckley probably gained hundreds of thousands of fans because of that one fight. So that's really cool. It's kind of going from an unknown fighter to becoming this, you know, kind of star overnight with this one knockout. I think is a pretty cool opportunity for someone like Buckley.
With former MMA fighter and MMA analyst Kenny Florian ahead of Khabib Gaethje tomorrow, and we have not seen Khabib in the octagon in over a year. And last time he was in there, he did what he always does. I mean, he's undefeated. He has not lost a fight. And submitted Poirier before that. It was 2 years ago when he laid a beating on Conor McGregor. So the potential for rust, you know, Gaethje's been fighting, and Gaethje's hungry here. But Khabib clearly favored, as he should be. Do you expect any rust? I mean, what should we be expecting to see out of Khabib tomorrow when he gets into the octagon?
You know, that is certainly a question that is valid. You know, we haven't seen him on this kind of a layoff, and especially when you couple that with the fact that he did recently lose his father, who was, you know, a big part of all of his fight camps. I mean, his father is the one who really trained him, and his father has been present for so many different fight camps. This is going to be one of those fight camps where he's not going to have his father. You know, of course, you know, kind of, you know, having that, those kind of feelings, you never know how someone's going to react. Now, I expect Khabib to, most likely be at 100%, mentally, physically, spiritually. I think he's the kind of guy that will probably be, buoyed and inspired in some ways, by his father's death. I don't see the ring rust being much of an issue for him. Khabib, it always has the same game plan for pretty much every fight. So I don't see a lot of things changing for this fight. And he's also the kind of guy, much like Gaethje, that performs when the lights are brightest. So I don't really expect that with Khabib.
How about on Gaethje's side of things? I mean, he's obviously – he's had some great fights throughout his career. He's riding pretty high, but he is not – maybe faced a guy like Khabib, a beast like Khabib. What does Gaethje have to do to win this fight?
You know, this is interesting. I do think that Gaethje is also the kind of guy that is not going to be spooked by someone like Khabib. I've seen guys in the past kind of lose before the fight even starts. I think that was kind of the case with Poirier, where I think Poirier mentally was kind of defeated before the Khabib fight even started. But I don't think that's going to be the case with Gaethje. I do think Gaethje is going to perform well. Here's the thing. You know, Gaethje comes from a solid wrestling background. He's a former Division I wrestler, you know, but we haven't really seen him, you know, utilize a lot of his wrestling in the octagon. He will definitely need it against Khabib. It will go one of two ways. He's able to stop the takedowns, he keeps the fight on the feet, and he's able to knock out Khabib. If he doesn't prevent the takedown, he gets put on his back, the fight will end very quickly. So I either see Khabib taking him down, keeping him there, and from there, Justin just doesn't have a lot of high-level jiu-jitsu to survive on his back. I see Khabib winning by TKO or submission pretty quickly, or he's able to frustrate Khabib enough and tire him out and keep the fight on the feet long enough where he will have the advantage against Khabib on the feet, and he can score a knockout. So I don't want to say it's a striker versus grappler matchup, obviously, because they both come from grappling backgrounds, but that's kind of the way I see it. Gaethje needs to keep this fight on the feet. He needs to stay in the center of the octagon. Khabib does most of his takedown work up against the cage. Gaethje is going to have to utilize his footwork, pick him apart from the outside, and when he has a chance, try to catch Khabib as he enters on a takedown.
With Kenny Florian, GSP is a guy obviously we're familiar with, and he's retired, he's out, but Habib's hoping to drag him back in, and Khabib has been saying leading up to this fight, and he said it in the past, that you know he kind of idolizes GSP, and he's always kind of mimicked his style in the octagon, and if he beats Gaethje, which he expects to do, the only fight that would really interest him is GSP. Not convinced George could get down to 155, which I'm not either, especially in retirement. But could you picture any enticement being there for George St. Pierre? Could you see him even listening and potentially being captivated some way in fighting Khabib in the future?
Absolutely. You know, I think, you know, George is in a unique position where he doesn't necessarily need the money. So, yes, it would probably require a lot of money for him to come out of retirement. But the one thing that could also lure GSP out of retirement is the fact that Khabib is an undefeated fighter. He is, you know, if he beats Gaethje, will go down as the greatest lightweight champion in UFC history. Perhaps one of the greatest champions in UFC history, period, out of any weight class. And, for, you know, that's the kind of legacy fight you would want, right? George St. Pierre was considered the greatest takedown artist in UFC history, I think, prior to Khabib. And the fact that these guys can kind of, you know, determine who the best takedown artist is in some ways in this fight, if they do it, I think would lure GSP out. I think the other thing is, and we saw it with the recent weigh-in with Khabib, I think 155 pounds is a difficult weight cut for him, and I think they could probably arrange some kind of catch weight at 165 pounds, perhaps, where they can both kind of meet and compete. So I think there are a few hurdles that would need to be, in place, or bypassed by the UFC and these fighters. But I am intrigued by a Khabib and GSP fight, and I think a lot of other people would love to see it.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. UFC 254, it's going to be a fun one. Check out the podcast, the Anik and Florian podcast. He is Kenny Florian. It's always great of you to take time. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you, Kenny.
Appreciate it, guys. Take care.
There he is, Kenny Florian. It'll be fun to see Khabib, Gaethje, and McGregor's obviously lurking in the background. He's fighting Dustin Poirier early January, and if he gets past him,
how much money is GSP going to ask for if to come out of retirement?
It would have to be an absolute fortune.
Are we like 10 million?
Yeah, potentially more, I guess. You know, plus percentages or whatever. I would think that would be one that Dana White would say, "We're not doing that until the fans are back." And then you wonder where it would fight. Probably in Montreal. You know, like Khabib might be pushing, let's fight in Russia or something like that. But I think if it's GSP coming out, that might be a Vegas fight. You know, that would be worth
in
so
Montreal,
much
money. That would do
massive
like,
numbers.
Montreal has an affinity for the sport. Like, I've been in Montreal on nights where these things are going on, whether in Montreal or just a big card elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And there is a energy in the evening and the amount of people that when you could go out, were out watching this thing and everyone... Like, they love it. So, yeah, you could probably bankroll pretty hefty ticket prices in Montreal.
For sure. And it would have to be George that gets the final say on a lot of things, right? Like, he doesn't have to take the fight. Khabib is really pushing for it. I don't know. I'd love to see it.
It would be. I would love to see it, but I agree with you, Hayes. I think it's when the world is somewhat right or back to normal with fans and you know, whether it's rapid testing or a vaccine, because you got to cash in on that one, and GSP will set all the parameters.
Yeah, like, for sure. For sure. And listen, neither of them are big promoters based on their own personalities, right? Like,
right.
Khabib is,
that's true.
Gives you one-word answers. George is not a big promoter. Like, GSP is kind of just a quiet, dignified, hey, let's go, let's see what happens, good luck kind of guy. He's not hyping anything. So you'd need the build-up. You'd need the gate.
Yeah. And
then you got McGregor lurking too, because as big as I think GSP Khabib would be, I think McGregor Khabib would be even bigger internationally.
Yeah.
Because of McGregor's appeal, you know, and how much he sells. And if McGregor beats Poirier and then is ready to go, you got Khabib taking on McGregor 2.0. That would just be a monster. And that's not going to happen until, again, there's fans in the stands, in Vegas, wherever it's going to be.
So McGregor's got to put on a show next fight. Like, he's got to be good.
He's got to
win. Like, it's been a while since he's kind of had a signature big moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cowboy, like, he beat up on Cerrone, but it was over before it even started. Like, he was done, and, you know, this will be a different story for sure in January. Brad Lidge coming up, Greg Vanney coming up from TFC as well. They got a big match tomorrow taking on Philly, and the Supporters' Shield will be handed out.
Squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Yes, that's right. Greg Vanney getting his way. We'll see what he has to tell us about that. And we'll tee up Game 3 of the World Series with Brad Lidge. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Greg Vanney of TFC will join us in about 15 minutes. Brad Lidge at 6:25 ahead of Game 3 of the World Series. And we talked about the Thursday nighter earlier on. We have Peter King join us. And that Daniel Jones run, it was an 80-yard run, which is very deceptive because it should have been taken to the house for a touchdown.
Yeah.
But he blows a wheel. And his teammates were, like, howling on the sideline. I would be laughing, too. I was laughing watching it. But I'm like, is he going to be able to overcome this? Like, this will say something about him. Is he fragile? And he's just like, I can't believe I did this on national TV, and we're 1-5, and we suck. I'm a young QB who can't put it together here. Like, will this be the butt fumble, which was, like, the beginning of the end for Mark Sanchez? Or can he laugh about it, move on, and have a 15-year career, and it's just something we laugh about for the next, you know, 15 years and maybe the rest of his life once he finds it funny?
I think he can move on. Honestly, I think he can move past. It's a meme, but, you know, his team stinks. It's not like he's the only reason why that team is awful. But, you know, we have all done embarrassing things. Johnny, you've I'm sure had some on-ice and off-ice issues. I remember in Minnesota one time we were playing Calgary, and on a two-on-one, I went to push across, and I fell down. I flat-out fell down, and they had a wide-open net, and they missed the net. And it was in the second period, and as the TV timeout, the goaltenders cross, Mike Vernon was the other goaltender, and he yells to me, he goes, "Sober up, you idiot." And I said, I just started laughing, like, because it was a really embarrassing push. Like, I hit a rut or something, and instead of pushing across, I literally just tipped over in the net. And I don't know how it didn't end up in the back of my net, but it happens sometimes. If that was today on Twitter, that would have been a meme.
Oh, it would have been all over SportsCenter. Guys like me would be talking about it constantly.
For sure.
But the worst part about Jones is it was like it happened in slow motion, and it was just so unathletic looking. And he's clearly a fast runner because the defensive back, whoever was trying to chase him down, wasn't really catching him.
Right.
He was going.
He was moving.
And then all of a sudden, he looked like, you know, a dad at the dad in hot potato sack race, and like he doesn't know what he's doing, just tumbling over in the middle of a. Yeah, it was a tough one.
We've all been there, but we're not all athletes,
happen,
right?
But.
Like he is a 24-year-old athletic quarterback who can run, and in the era of a mobile quarterback, right? Like you can't picture Mahomes doing that. You can't picture that happening to obviously Lamar Jackson or even Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, Mahomes.
He came out to his defense like, I'm not even going to laugh because I'm going to be honest, I can't run that far either.
It's a long run, right? Like you're not used to that. You don't prepare for that if you're a quarterback. You're never thinking I'm going to run 80-plus yards and take it to the house. But he had no one around him, and it was very unathletic. Like, it was something that right. I think a lot of people have been in that situation. If you're running for the first time in a long time, it's not necessarily like riding a bike. You know, you're not a kid. You don't have a low center of gravity.
And you're a pro athlete. Like, it's just, it's running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he had it. Like, he was going to the house. It's not like there was one more line of defense or someone was burning on a different angle and was going to get to him by, like, the 5-yard line or 10-yard line. It was a walk-in home run touchdown that would have been an incredible highlight. What a play. Like, the play worked, right? If you're Joe Judge, you're circling that play saying, we got to use that again, but we kind of wasted it, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's supposed to take us to the house, but it did work. It was just simply this guy, I don't know what happened. Yeah. He went Bambi, and he just blew a wheel.
What do you think lasts longer, butt fumble or that?
Butt fumble, right?
Fumble, for sure.
Because the name fumble. And all of it,
Yeah. Butt fumble so much better.
Or Mark Sanchez.
It's just way better. Both New York teams. And they both suck still, right? The Giants and the Jets.
They do.
Final hour up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Accepted-ated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA License 12616.
This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.